This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. President Clinton is wrapping up his final week in the White House. Last week, we began a series of interviews with some of the people who served in the Clinton White House. Today, we hear from two press secretaries who had to deal with, among other things, the Monica Lewinsky scandal. We begin with Mike McCurry. He was the president's second press secretary, replacing Dee Dee Myers in 1995. McCurry resigned in 1998 and was replaced by his deputy press secretary, Joe Lockhart, at the beginning of the impeachment proceedings. We'll hear from Lockhart a little later. I asked Mike McCurry to describe the major stories that he dealt with.
Well, remember, I began in January of 95 and went through the balance of 1998, and though most will remember the Mike McCurry press secretary show as having to do mostly with Monica, in that same time, we really handled all the things that I think are sort of pivotal in understanding the Clinton presidency, the showdown with Newt Gingrich and the Republican Congress beginning in 1995, the effort to balance the budget consistent with some of President Clinton's overall federal budget priorities, the ongoing war in Bosnia, the awful incident of bombing in Oklahoma City at the Murrow Federal Office Building, really the kind of ongoing struggle to define what America's role in the post-Cold War era should be, which was dominated more than a little bit of the briefing time that I had at the White House. So it was a calendar and a menu much fuller than that associated with the one episode that I think is kind of memorable, the Monica Lewinsky era.
Now, you took over from Clinton's first press secretary, Dee Dee Myers. What were the problems between the press and the Clinton White House when you took over?
Well, the relationship between the press and the presidency is always kind of a frosty one, but it lacked a little of the professionalism that I think needs to exist at the White House. There was not a great deal of respect on the part of the press for the young White House aides who worked in the press office and elsewhere, and correspondingly, there wasn't a lot of respect on the part of the White House and its staff for the press. I think there was some sense that this adversarial relationship was far less amicable than it needed to be for people to just kind of get on with business every day. So we made some effort early on in January 1995 and going forward to really restore some measure of civility in the relationship, even though it was never going to be a relationship of true love.
What were some of the changes you made?
I think just really responding more quickly and adeptly to inquiries, respecting the time of reporters who, of course, have to work on deadlines every day and face professional requirements, understanding that they're people, that they have creature needs, and that sometimes work at the White House is not very conducive to having a fun lifestyle. I think a lot of people would be surprised that White House beat for most reporters is far less glamorous than one might imagine. Lots of early morning pool duties, lots of late night travel to get from one place to the next, and not nearly as much fun as a lot of people would think.
Creature needs are what? Food, bathrooms, and chairs?
Yeah, food and drink, primarily, and sleep when available.
Now, did you try to talk to either the president or other members of the administration about how to improve relations with the press?
I did, and I got a commitment both from the president, from Mrs. Clinton, and from others to really try to do a little bit better job of respecting the needs and the time of reporters. And I think, by and large, we did pretty well. We couldn't always accommodate the schedules of reporters. We probably weren't always as forthcoming or as useful with information as we needed to be. But I think we began to improve the flow of information that went from the White House to the American people. Ultimately, the White House and the press probably care about the same thing, which is getting as much good information in the hands of the American people. The press, because that's their job. The White House, because I think they believe that if you can get information about what you're doing into the hands of the American people, they will believe that what you're doing is right. So I try to build on what, at least in theory, should be some common interest between both sides of this adversarial relationship.
One of your conditions for taking the job as press secretary was that there had to be another press contact for Whitewater. Why didn't you want to deal with Whitewater?
Well, it would be very easy for the White House to kind of mimic the news organizations that were pursuing the Whitewater matter. One of my old bosses, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, is fond of saying that organizations in conflict become like one another, and it would have been very easy for us to just get sucked into doing nothing but whitewater all the time. But I recognize this, that all of the news organizations pursuing whitewater and related subjects had specialists, had investigative reporters and others who were focusing only on that matter. And I said, well, why doesn't the White House respond in kind by creating a place where those questions can be dealt with, but dealt with sort of offline, away from the press briefing room, away from, you know, the other work that needed to be done to understand what the day-to-day work of the White House was about. And I think that worked satisfactorily. The other thing was we had a good group of lawyers and then recruited lawyers who could serve the function of being press spokesmen for the team that was really working on that particular set of issues. So you had people who could work with the confidence of the lawyers and the attorneys who were on the Whitewater matter, and I think that led to more professional treatment of some of the media inquiries that came in.
Well, it sounds like a smart and clever approach, and it got Whitewater off your hands, but then you got Monica. Did you ask the president to tell you whatever he could, or did you want to know as little as possible?
Well, I think I wanted to know as much as possible, but I also recognize that if I walked into the Oval Office and said to the president, what's the deal with you and this young lady, he would have then forfeited his right to have confidential communications with attorneys. You know, the president, it was often said during the whole Lewinsky matter, is not above the law, but the truth is he's not beneath the law either. He had certain rights, and obviously one of them was to confer in private with his attorneys and to really get some sense of how to shape a defense to what was, after all, a very aggressive and determined prosecution aimed at his direction. So we had to labor in the very peculiar circumstance of referring back to lawyers, referring to statements that had been drafted for the president by his attorneys, and really not budge much beyond that set of parameters that we were given for response.
Now, your approach during the Monica Lewinsky story was to say what the president said and say that the president said so-and-so and not offer your own opinions. Why was that your approach, and can you give us an example of how you'd phrase an answer?
Well, I think the reason for that, and that was my approach because I didn't know anything. I, in the great words of the character from Stalag 17 or whatever the show was, I knew nothing. and I kind of remained in that state of not knowing by design, on purpose, for the reasons I said. But it was very important to me not to do anything that would make matters worse. I think White Houses, when they face scandal or crisis, very often start dissembling. And that usually ends up putting everyone in a worse spot than if they just stuck to what they knew for sure to be true. What I knew for sure was that I'd been handed a piece of paper that had the words on it crafted very carefully by lawyers, and I wasn't going to budge from that statement. And I think in a lot of different ways I managed to say I'm not going to parse this statement further, which was very interesting. I heard from a lot of English teachers around the country saying, oh, thank goodness someone remembers what the discipline of parsing sentences is all about.
So what press conference was the worst ordeal for you?
Well, the worst ordeals were those things that dealt with real tragedy, not farce. Monica was mostly farce. Tragedy was when Ron Brown died tragically on a mission to Bosnia, when we saw that awful explosion at the Murrow office building in Oklahoma City, when we saw the devastation and the ethnic cleansing that came to dominate life for those living in the Balkans. Those were the things that were truly awful to deal with, because the United States of America, for all of its greatness in the world, couldn't control things like that. And dealing with death and dealing with that kind of tragedy, where I think was the hardest personally to deal with, particularly in a case when it's someone that you knew and respected and had a great fondness for, like Secretary Brown.
But in a situation like that, the really hard part is the fact of what happened, as
right,
opposed to questions that you're being asked that you have to strategize a way to deal with and maybe dodge.
Well, that's the natural instinct of press secretaries, to bob and weave, but to deal with the raw gut emotion when you feel it and keep your professionalism and keep your sense of, keep the sense of being circumspect about these things that otherwise would cause you turmoil. I mean, that personally was very, very hard to do, to not not get over emotional on the podium.
Getting back to the ordeal question, let me ask you specifically of from the Monica era, which press conference was the worst ordeal?
Oh, I mean, they all kind of, it's a long time ago now, they all sort of run together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like for a period there in January of 1998, it was, you know, it was mostly just this kind of almost comic soap opera every day. And in fact, it was pretty much soap opera, and I don't think one was any more memorable than the next.
Well, you say comic, I mean, you were often very funny. And
well, I by design. I mean, if you didn't have information and didn't have anything that you could use by way of an answer, you ought to do something, at least entertain the masses.
What jokes got the best reaction?
The ones that were carefully designed in advance. I think the line that was memorable that, frankly, was not mine and we came up with in advance of a briefing was, because you knew what the circumstance would be, I wouldn't be able to really say much of anything. I kind of looked aside at one point to my staff and said, I feel like I'm double parked in a no-comment zone.
So you didn't write that? Who wrote it?
It was like, I think we sat around just sort of, I begged my staff, let's sit here with me and come up with some clever one-liners that will get me off the stage sooner rather than later.
Do you think the reporters empathized a bit?
Yeah, I think they understood. I mean, they didn't enjoy covering the story any more than I enjoyed answering the questions about it. The White House press corps consists of some of the best journalists anywhere in the world, people who know incredible amounts of things, who are capable of covering foreign policy, domestic policy, popular culture. They really are some of the best in the business, and to be reduced to sort of chasing this particular story day after day after day with seeming no end was, I think, very frustrating to the press.
Did the Monica story put a strain on your relationship with the president, because there were things that he couldn't really tell you, there were things that you were probably better off not knowing, and he was under such a great strain, and you were under such a great strain? Did that strain manifest itself in your relationship as well?
I think everybody was under strain, but everybody knew that we had to get our jobs done and had to stay focused on what mattered most, and it was not questions about Monica, it was the things that the president was elected to do, and that if, as long as we stayed focused on that and let our energy go into the work that we had to do, that things would hopefully come out all right in the end.
Now, the president did his best to stay focused on issues he was working on. What about you? Was it possible for you to stay focused on those issues at press conferences?
I walked into the briefing every day with a big, fat, black book filled with things that I think that we had anticipated there'd be lots of questions about, because there were things going on in government or around the world that might require some comment from the White House. And I think every day I walked out somewhat surprised and really, in a sense, concerned that so little of the questioning had ever gotten off to another matter.
My guest is Mike McCurry. He was the White House press secretary from 1995 to 98. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Mike McCurry is my guest. He was the White House press secretary from 1995 to 98. You were the first press secretary to handle all briefings on television. How does it change things when you're doing it on TV?
In retrospect, I don't know whether I would have made that change, because it does change the dynamic of the briefing. It creates way too many instances in which I think journalists have to posture for the cameras, or at least for the, you know, their editor somewhere may be watching their performance just as they're looking for the answers from the podium. So it kind of creates more tension in the briefing room than I think needs to exist. And there probably has to be a better way to really get good information in the hands of reporters so they can report on what's happening.
You were press secretary during one of the most partisan moments in recent American history, and I'm wondering if the partisan nature of what was happening in Congress affected the kinds of questions you were getting asked by the press. Do you think that the press was getting partisan at the same time?
I think there was a lot of partisanship in Washington, and it's the way in which we deal with information overload sometimes, the fact that there's so much news all the time, 24/7, you know, running nonstop, that the only context for understanding a storyline is to make it all black and white. It's us versus them. It's the Democrats versus Republicans. And so everything gets turned into sort of verbal mud wrestling. And I plead guilty to that. I think probably I injected way too much partisanship into the commentary at the White House. And in the end, I think Americans appreciate it when they just get as much solid, good information as possible. And they like it when they see people trying to work out differences rather than exacerbating differences. And so I'm not so sure that any of us serve the American public well by being that partisan. Marlon Fitzwater, one of my predecessors, once told me that anytime you were standing at the podium and you were talking about the opposition leaders in Congress, you could probably be pretty certain that you were on very dangerous terrain. And I think that was good advice on his part.
What did he mean by that?
I think he meant that if you're not, as a government spokesman, as a spokesman for the White House, you can get too political, that it's really up to those who work in campaigns and those who represent our political parties to do the business of politics, that you know, the presidency has to be about doing the people's business at the end of the day. And, you know, we're one of the only countries on the face of the earth where the spokesman for the leader has both a political role and an official capacity as a government employee. And most other democracies, that job is split between the spokesman for the political party and then maybe the spokesman for the prime minister or the president, who has more of an official role. And in our political culture, we've blended those two roles in the person of the press secretary, and that might be something that we want to rethink.
Now, I want to just ask you briefly about a real turning point for the Clinton presidency, and that's when Clinton refused to sign the Republican budget, and the government was shutting down, and Clinton wasn't going to budge. And so the Republicans finally had to back off. It was really important for you as press secretary to put out the right interpretation of this, to give your story a positive spin and not a negative one. Tell me a little bit about how you handled that and the importance for you of using the right language and figuring out how you were going to frame the story for the press.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's an instance in which I think I didn't exactly do the job the way the president wanted, because I tended to be a little too partisan. I tended to paint the story as our budget's better than theirs, and here's why. And I think the president felt that I might have been a little too sharp and too partisan in the way I spoke about Speaker Gingrich and about the Republican majority in Congress. He very frequently sort of dialed me down a little bit and told me to not get out there as far as we got sometimes. The reason was simple. He was, you know, doing the very careful business of trying to negotiate with those same Republicans, and he knew that they were watching very carefully what the White House said on his behalf. And I think he wanted us to be very, very careful, because at the end, he was the guy that got elected, not any of us. And he was the one that wanted to be in the position to actually try to compromise or negotiate the deal, and he didn't want to have a lot of public statements out there that would complicate his job. So I think we had to be careful. At the same time, you know, we were getting ready. We were in a desperately important political fight, probably in a way the most important political fight of the Clinton presidency. And it was important for us to prevail, because we believed in the values and the priorities that we were defending. But I think it's a very careful line to walk, and it's hard to get it right all the time. And I think that's when you have to be exceedingly sure that you're reflecting exactly what the president himself once said, because, again, he's the one that counts, not the staff.
So would you usually have meetings with the president after press conferences to go over your performance?
I'd hear about it if he wasn't satisfied with the performance. I mean, we didn't do a debrief, because, frankly, the president didn't have enough time to watch my briefings every day. But if something went wrong, he usually very quickly knew about it.
What do you think that President Clinton should be most remembered for?
Well, I think in time he is going to be remembered most for the growth of the Internet and the changes that have occurred in our economy and communications technologies. In 20 years from now, I doubt anyone will, you know, they might remember who Monica Lewinsky is. They'll probably remember that Bill Clinton got impeached, but they'll be a little vague on the circumstances. What they will remember for sure is at the end of the 20th century, in the late 1990s, this thing called the Internet really took off, developed, became a real factor in the lives of the American people. And I've got to believe that in time, those changes in technology and in our society are going to be much clearer, and they will be associated with Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton will get some of the credit that he rightfully deserves for having created the conditions that those changes could occur.
When you left the White House, what advice did you give your successor, Joe Lockhart?
When I left, I was dead wrong about everything. I said to him, Joe, you're going to have a good 2 years here to really help promote the president's agenda, because the Democrats are going to do well in the midterm election in 1998, and of course the Republicans are going to drop impeachment and never go on with that. So just remember to stay focused on all those things that we were talking about during the 1996 re-election campaign, and you'll be home free. It ended up being exactly wrong.
Right. Mike McCurry, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Mike McCurry was the White House press secretary from 1995 to 98. He's now the CEO of grassroots.com. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.